This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
I'm Danielle from Hertfordshire, and I'm nearly 10 months sober now. I was probably what you'd call a grey area drinker. I didn't drink all the time, but when I did, I didn't really have an off switch, and it just left me feeling low energy, low motivation, and just not really an optimal version of myself. I joined the OTI community after listening to the awesome Over the Influence podcast for quite a few months, and I've never looked back. There's Zoom calls every week on different days. You actually get to see Shaz and Ben, which is so exciting, and make that kind of community a reality and really come to life. I would highly, highly recommend joining the Over the Influence community. It was the game changer for me to feel connected in sobriety.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Over the Influence. We like to sing about sobriety a lot on this podcast, and it is all about the guests. If you are maybe finding us for the very first time, a quick reintroduction as to who we are. My name's Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England, approaching 4.5 years alcohol free. Woohoo! It never gets any less exciting. I think it was something like 250 odd Sundays I've woken up without a hangover, and it gets better and better and better. The feeling never wears off. Our guest today, she's nodding, she's going, yes, yes, she gets it, totally gets it. I don't do this on my own. I'm with he's not tired today, he's a little bit giddy. Ben, yeah. How are you doing?
Fine, I'm Ben, I'm 34, I live in Liverpool, 2.5 years sober. You don't care because you know that our guest is Laura McCowan. Right, so, one stranger who understands your experience exactly will do for you what hundreds of close friends and family who don't understand cannot. Yes, she is on my quotes board. I flipping love that.
What
quote.
Were you looking at just now?
I've literally, Laura, so I am a technophobe. I know how to edit a podcast. I can't do anything else with technology. So when I say I've got a quotes board, I handwrite quotes that I see and like, and then pin them to my actual quotes board that I've got in front of me. And you are right in the middle of it. Hello and welcome to Over the Influence. How are you?
Hi, what a warm welcome. I love it. You're a man after my own heart with an actual quote board.
Seriously.
I have to say.
Honestly. Yeah. In fact, Ben, can we have the quote again? I want you just to take your time and read Laura's quote again, please.
One stranger who understands your experience exactly will do for you what hundreds of close friends and family who don't understand cannot. Which is fabulous, isn't it? And so true. And basically what Over the Influence is all about. Mm-hmm. I've got many of the quotes on here. You are joined by Michael Jordan on my quotes board, Laura. Once I made a decision, I never thought about it again. Michael Jordan. Aristotle, we are what we repeatedly do.
Excellence, it makes sense.
It's not an act, but a habit. And Sharon's favourite is from the Australian bush nurse, Sister Kenny. He who angers you, conquers you, Laura.
Love it.
I mean,
that's
Ben, are we going to do
company?
Are we going to do an episode of your quote board, or should
no.
we chat?
Over to
Laura.
You, Sharon. Over
shall
to
we?
You.
Shall we crack on? brilliant stuff, Laura. Welcome to Over the Influence. It's fantastic to have you here. First question: how are you doing?
I'm great. I am in Cancun, Mexico, right now on a last minute getaway. My fiance earlier this week said he has a band that he loves, Fish. I don't know if you're familiar with Fish. I think they're big all over the world, but they have a very culty following.
Okay.
He's a huge fan, and I cannot stand the music, but I'm very grateful to Fish because they inspire him to travel lots of places, and I get to go along. He said, do you want to go to Mexico on Sunday? I think he said that on Monday for a week, and I was like, obviously I do.
Well, hell yeah, obviously.
So I'm great.
Well, I know, where do we start? It's brilliant to have you on the podcast. But for anybody that's maybe not heard of what you do, about the books you've written, there's another book coming out that we're going to talk about a little bit later on. Just give us a bit of a an introduction, Laura, as to you and what you get up to.
Sure. I am a woman in long-term recovery. I think I can say that now. I've been sober for 8.5 years. I'm a mother. I have one who just turned 14 yesterday, a girl. I guess.
Oh, happy birthday.
She's still a girl. Yes, she's still a girl. And I had a long career in marketing and advertising. And then when I got sober, I realized that I didn't want to do that anymore, if I ever had. And I started writing and talking and podcasting and all of that about trying to get sober and then finally getting sober. And I am the founder of an international sobriety community called the Luckiest Club. And I have two books, well, soon to be two books out. My first book, We Are the Luckiest, came out in 2020. And that is my memoir of getting of sobriety. And Push Off From Here is coming out on March 7th. And that is, well, maybe we'll talk about it. It's a follow-up, also sobriety-based book. And yeah, that's what I do. Those are the high level things.
That's so good. There's so much to talk about. I want to talk about your recovery journey, about the fact that you stopped drinking and started writing, about drinking as a mother. We're probably a similar age. I've got kids like you as well. And oh, there's so much to go at. I suppose, if you don't mind, can we rewind a bit and talk about just before you got sober? And maybe the run-up you took at it, because the amount of people we have in our community, myself included in this, it doesn't happen overnight. You know, you have this idea that, oh, maybe I could do to change, and, you know, maybe I need to reassess my relationship with alcohol, and you go, and then you trip, and then you go again, and then you trip. What was it like for you, Laura?
Yes, it was not instant by any means. I would have done anything to not have to face the fact that I had a problem with alcohol. And I did really try to do anything. The inciting incident, or the reason that I had to try to start stopping, let's say, was I left my 4-year-old daughter, she was 4 then, in a hotel room overnight while I was blackout drunk alone. So I left her alone. I was off doing whatever I was doing. And, you know, she was just in my care. So she was alone. And that was found out by my family, who was at the wedding, because she had made her way through the halls of the hotel, miraculously found some hotel staff, and they found my mom. So I woke up that morning to panicked texts, angry texts of, where are you? We have your daughter. What the hell's going on? You know, like worst nightmare type of things. And because it was public to my family, and because I couldn't explain my way out of that one, and because for me, it was my daughter, and it was the thing that I thought, I knew how much harm I was causing everywhere else, but I just thought, there's no way I'll actually put her in danger, right? I wouldn't leave her alone overnight. I wouldn't do anything like that. I thought that that was something that would never happen, no matter how bad it got. And I had already had a DUI. I had had the list of consequences was very long already, but I just thought that my denial was very thick around that, and it happened. And so that forced me to go to my first 12-step meeting when I got back home. And it took me, that was in July of 2013, and I didn't get sober until September of 2014. But I, in that year of time, year plus, I went from being really wanting anything else in the entire world than to stop drinking and get sober to, you know, slowly. Oh, I spent a lot of time sober that year, to be honest. I put together a lot of sober days, and I started to taste what sobriety could offer. And I started to see what it was like to wake up without hangovers, and to have my mind available to me when I went to work, and to not have shame, just like living in this film of shame constantly. I started to taste what that was like. And I started to write as well. And I started to get a taste for the idea that this dream that I had long had of becoming an author might actually be possible. if I got sober. So all these, I felt this, I call it like the bigger yes. Like, you know, I was running away from a lot, but when I started to reach for something else instead of just having it be all no and shut down and everything is over, to I'm going to reach for something brighter and bigger and better, which sounds like it should be easy, but it's not, because we can't see that it's going to be bigger, brighter, better. So I slowly gained glimpses of that. And then in September of 2014, I finally did stop. I didn't know that my last day would be my last day. I was so sick of my own shit and so tired of telling myself that I was never going to drink again that I just decided not to do that anymore. I said, I'm not saying forever. I'm not saying anything. I was so disgusted with myself and just so tired that, and that it wasn't a big night. Like, it wasn't that bad. Nothing horrible happened. It was just, I guess I just had enough, and I only started to, I focused on the day right in front of me. Like, I promise that I will do everything in my power to not drink today. And I'm going to worry about tomorrow. And if I change my mind tomorrow, fine, but I'm going to worry about today right now. And somehow miraculously, I kept going.
Laura, where do we start? There's so much I want to pick up on within that.
Go ahead.
I think the bit that kind of jumped out to me there, I love what you were saying about the bigger yes. I think that's such a, I love that phrase as well. And in fact, we've got one of our community members watching this Zoom call who's been a previous podcast guest of ours, Susan, and it's an episode called The Believer. And actually, she was last week's guest, The Achiever. She came on for an update a year later to tell us how she's doing.
Oh, nice. Love
but
that.
Susan, in her first episode, said, you know, she didn't necessarily feel all these benefits of sobriety straight away, but that she had to just, she said, I have to believe these people, you know, the people who've trodden this path before.
Yes.
I have to believe them, and I have to believe that this will come for me. And I think from the updated episode that we got last week from Susan, everyone will be able to hear that things are starting to pretty much slot into place very nicely for Susan McGarry, the believer slash the achiever. The bit that I'd really like to pick up on is you said that that night with the hotel, that forced you to go to your first 12 steps meeting. The word forced there is an interesting one.
Mm.
Is that because of the pressure that you felt from your family members, for example? Was that the only way to kind of to get them off your back at that point?
I was going to lose custody of my daughter. Like, that was the explicit threat. And I wasn't, that was the one thing I suppose that I wasn't willing to lose. I couldn't fathom that. You know, it wasn't, some part of me, some deep down part of me didn't want to keep doing, I wanted the, I call it like the third door. I didn't want to keep drinking as I had because it was fucking miserable, but I didn't want to get sober either. I wanted the third option, like the third door. There's got to be some way that I can figure it out so I can keep drinking, but not drink like that. But yeah, it was because that my brother, my mom, my ex-husband were all saying, like, this can't go on, or you're not going to have your daughter anymore.
I'm recently a dad. You know, my boy's 4 months old. And I think, you know, having this conversation now, it's very different to, you know, if I was having this conversation a year ago, because I totally...
You wouldn't understand. Yeah.
No. And you know what? I saw there was a rugby player that posted on Instagram. He'd had his daughter about 3 months before my boy Leo was born. And he put this post on being like, I totally understand now this unconditional love that people talk about. I remember having a conversation with my fiance, Jen, being like, well, what if I don't feel that? Like, what if I don't have that overwhelm me? And she said, you are the guy that puts the dog to bed every night and says, Dolly, I love you and I'll always look after you. I think you're going to love our child. Don't worry.
Yeah, but, I think you're going to be all right.
But I now, I suppose being a dad means I do understand that feeling, because it sounds like there were events that happened before that you were damaging yourself. You know, you were drinking.
I was damaging other people too. I wasn't, in my mind, I wasn't damaging my daughter, although I was. Right. I was go ahead. Sorry, interrupted.
How long was that period? You know, from the first time that the thought kind of got into your head, right, alcohol's not doing me any good anymore. Because that's such a big, especially when people are first starting to think about this. I think people don't like to admit how long this has been in the build-up to actually deciding to finally fully remove alcohol.
Yeah,
but
right.
It's an important thing to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I would have, my answer is different now than it would have been then. I knew that I drank differently, that I liked it too much. I knew that when I was 17. I mean, I remember feeling just this overwhelming when I would drink, that the idea was like, if I can just stay this way, this slightly buzzed, if I have alcohol, it's not alcohol, it's Perrier, but if I have this, everything's going to be okay. And that's what I really felt. And that is not a, that's not a healthy relationship to alcohol. So I can see that happening, you know, very early when I was 17. It's so tricky because it's like, you can both know and not know, you know, but you won't know, you refuse to know. So I knew somewhere, like I would have moments where here's an interesting answer to the question. If I look back on my journals, which I did when I started to write my memoir, alcohol is a theme in there from the time I was a teenager, wanting to drink less, like saying that I wasn't good with this was hard, or being so ashamed of my recent blackouts, or this happened with this guy, or this happened with a friend. So I knew somewhere, but in the light of day, I didn't admit that until I went into that meeting, probably. But I would say it took a turn when I became a mom, big time. The drinking got different. I had to drink more. My anxiety was worse. And so I kind of knew, like, this is bad. But you need it so much. We believe that you need it so much. So it's a tricky question to answer, because we can both know the cognitive dissonance is so big.
Can we talk a bit more about drinking and being a mum? Because it comes up a lot. So just so you know where I'm coming from, I've got three kids. They're now 22, 19 and 14. So same age as your daughter, my lad. And I stopped drinking 4.5 years ago. But is it the pressure to drink? It's just so flipping accepted in society in general. But we'll just talk about in particular being a mum, being at home, your relationships change, your world changes, your socialising, I can't even say the word, socialising changes. And for me, it sort of began to change, I suppose, with my second child in my 30s. Just have a glass of wine. Just have a glass of wine. Because that's what you do, isn't it? And then it got to sort of mid-40s, Laura, and I'm looking around going, shit, when did this happen? When did it change? When did a bottle of wine become not only normal and then some, but celebrated and encouraged?
Joked
and
about.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, where to start about this? And I now, a lot of women in particular get in touch and talk to me about parenthood and what's it like, and you don't drink anymore, and how did you do it? And I just said, aside from every single sort of positive that there is, and there are a million positives, one of the best things hands down in the world is being a sober parent. It's just, well,
agree.
I just never go back. I don't have a question. I just went on some sort of ramble there.
I have many things I can say on that, and I
jump in, please.
You're pro, Laura.
I affirm your experience entirely. It's complicated, but I think there are a few things that I've observed now, having listened to a lot of other mothers as well. You know, physiologically, our bodies change at that time. And I went through definite postpartum depression, anxiety, but I didn't know that that's what was going on. And hey, alcohol just, it's there. And it's totally acceptable to drink, like you said. I mean, I joked, and all the other moms joked along, that I couldn't wait to get back to my wine when I was done being pregnant. And I was like, of course, yay, you know. And I did, I went right back into it. I think there's also something, I kept working full time. Nothing in my life changed. I just now had this massive responsibility of being a mom. So you're spinning more plates. And it's like, what is holding that up in the back end? And there's this feeling that I had, like, okay, my world feels so small now. So small. And what do I have that's just mine? And it was this wine. Like, that time with this wine is mine.
And it's like a a bizarre fake friend. It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah. It's a comfort. It's reliable. It actually does provide some, we drink because it works. It's not, we're not just imagining it. It's like social lubricant. It does provide this uprush of dopamine. You know, there's all kinds of side effects that come on the back end, but it's a powerful drug. So yeah. It makes sense. It completely makes sense why this happened. And then you can't overstate the influence of marketing to women, and especially mothers in the past 15 years. You can't overstate that. That's just, it was deliberate and it was massive. So even, people will say, well, I'm not that influenced by marketing. It's like, yeah, you are. Everyone is.
Yeah.
We are.
Yeah.
And then it's a shame cycle. You before you know it, you're in it.
It does. It bites you on the ass. I think you reach a certain age and it's so insipid. It just creeps up. It's insipid. And then you go, oh my God. And then you're in it.
And then you're addicted.
Yeah. And God, half the world and his wife's addicted. But until you remove yourself from it, until you take a break and until you start on this crazy flipping journey that is sobriety, because I didn't want to be sober. I was going to get straight back on it, Laura, after my little break, my reset. And I think you touched on this at the beginning of our chat. You don't know what's about to happen once you are out of it. And it's crazy. It sounds so simplistic, doesn't it? Saying in order to experience sobriety, you've got to stop drinking. But while you are still drinking, you can't in many ways imagine it, can you?
No, of course not. And it's such a catch-22, because, and this isn't just for mothers, but it's for everyone. We're told that this is the way, we're told and we feel that this is the way to get what we want and what we need. Connection, social time, relaxing, love, sex, friendship. Work was very much had alcohol was infused into my work too. And so I very much associated that with making connections at work, with letting off the steam after we had big projects or just a hard day. So it's literally, it seemed like this way to get my needs met. And in many ways it did work for a long time. And then we're told, no, you can't, or we come to this place where you got to stop this. So it works. And then you get addicted to it and it's like, oh, your fault. You're supposed to like it, but not that much. You're supposed to do it, but not like that. And now you need to go away and go deal with it somewhere far away without ruining the party for everyone else. And as a mother, it's like, it's so lonely anyway. So to think that you're going to take away this, you're going to lose all your friends and all your social time. You're going to have to sit through playdates sober. Are you kidding me? Of course you don't want to do it. Who would want that?
Laura, I love your no bullshit approach to all of this. I know that we don't know each other very well, and I hope that that's not offensive, me saying that.
But
I love you are just so straight talking with this. It's when you said then, alcohol, it does work, and I think that it's important to say that, and it's important to recognise that. And we talk about that a lot in the community, in the sense of, I can look back. I am absolutely better off without alcohol, full stop, no questions. But there were times in my life where I had a great time when I was drinking. Mm-hmm. There's a quote that I've got here, and this is from an article. It's
another one. Laura, another quote.
Yes, I've seen this go around social media before, but this is an article that you did in The Candidly publication. Mm. The question is, if we feel like someone in our life might have an unhealthy relationship with alcohol, is an intervention the only model? How can we have our own healthy boundaries, but also not disconnect from them, is the question. And you talk about a time when somebody said, their sister was struggling. And what would you suggest to help them. And you said, give them this list. Number one, it's not your fault. Number two, it is your responsibility. Number three, it's unfair that this is your thing. Number four, this is your thing. Number five, this will never stop being your thing until you face it. Number six, you can't do it alone. Number seven, only you can do it. Number eight, I love you. And number nine, I will never stop reminding you of these things. It is, it's a, that list, it just highlights that this thing is not, there's not one route here, is there? There's not one way of doing this. And it's okay to be conflicted about it.
It's, and it's complicated.
Oh, so complicated. Yes. It's a bit like, you know, an ex. When you look at alcohol, it's very easy to just go bad, 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 bad. You know, it's like an ex, when you've been dumped. And you're like, well, there was no good bits of that. It was a wasted 3 years and everything was crap. You know, sorry. Do you think it is important to have that kind of realistic approach looking back rather than just demonize? Or do we almost need to do that? Do we almost need to scorn alcohol as the ex that dumped us?
Wow. I think for a while you need to be, it needs to be really tight and almost rigid when you're getting sober. You need a hard boundary. Like, you need to know that you can't fuck with alcohol anymore. And I've seen this in myself. When you first get sober, I had to have very, very rigid boundaries about what I did, who I hung out with, where I went, what media I listened to. All of these things had to be very tight and protective of this thing I was trying to create. So in that sense, I had to believe that my ex was a terrible, no good person, period. But as you go along, that having that rigidity doesn't serve us long term. And that's not how we actually grow. And over the years, I'm able to have a much more neutral view on alcohol, where I can see that it really saved me in so many ways. I'm grateful for it now. As a young girl, it helped me make through times that were, I don't know that I would have made it without drugs and alcohol, you know? But that romanticizing isn't helpful in the beginning, in my experience. So over time is where the paradox comes in and the complexity comes in. And those statements, those nine statements, are very paradoxical for a reason. It's not your fault, and it's still your responsibility. It's unfair that this is your thing, and it is your thing. You can't do it alone, and only you can do it. You know, my attempt is to balance this precision and this sort of discipline and just truth, the reality of, like, no one's going to do this but you, with a lot of compassion, that it isn't your fault and you also can't do it alone. And I think the attempts at, I think anytime we're thinking in a black and white dualistic way, it's not helpful in the long term, but sometimes we need that in the short term to, when we're making a change, we need that to build those boundaries and to create this new self. But would I want to live that way now? No, because what would that mean? I'd be freaking out every time I saw alcohol, and I'd be judgmental of everyone who drank it. And that's how I was in the beginning. And that was okay. I was very annoying to be around in the beginning, because all I wanted to do was talk about sobriety. And I was so judgmental of everyone and how stupid, like, don't you know this is poison? You know, that was me. But I needed to be that way. And now it's very neutral and it's fine, but that's just part of the process. So your question was, do we have to have that sort of neutral stance around our ex? And I don't think you have to. I think that eventually in recovery, you grow into that, because it's no place to live being afraid of something, hating something, thinking that something, you know, being judgmental, having resentments. We know that. That's no way to live in the long run. But man, that's a process.
What another fabulous episode of Over the Influence. Ben, it's so good, this chat with Laura. We need to keep this brief because we've got to get back to it.
We do. It's Laura McCowan.
Actual Laura McCowan.
It's so good. It's so good.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, when you get in touch with somebody, you think, you know what, if you don't ask, you don't get. Mm. And we asked and we got, and it's just so good. It's brilliant. She's on your quote board and everything.
Yeah.
Right, I'll stop. Ben, on the website, we have got a stack load of merch.
We do.
To shift.
I'm wearing...
I say it's on the website.
It's on my body right now.
It's on your body. Look at that. Look at mine.
We are so sad. We're both sitting here in our Over the Influence hoodies. But they are bloody nice, aren't they? It's embroidered. It's not, you know,
this
printed on. It's embroidered logo.
Listen,
on there. White on black. Very stylish, darling.
This isn't one word of a lie. On one of my Zoom calls last night, we've got a fabulous member. I'm just going to call her F. She knows who she is. And she was sitting there on the Zoom call rocking a hoodie. And I'm like, big up your bad self. And she went, Shaz. She said, not that she's Northern, but she went, oh, Shaz, aren't they great quality? And I'm like, Ben,
you know,
push for that.
Right, in terms of the quality, can I tell you how good quality this merch is? Because yesterday, as we record this, yesterday I climbed Helvellyn, the third biggest mountain in England, with community member Danny. And it was, Shaz, it was snowing at the top. Like it was, it wasn't snowing. It had snowed at the top. It was an icy climb, that last little bit up Swirl, what's it called? Swirl Edge.
Up Swirls and across striding.
Yes, yeah, so we went up Swirl Edge and it was like vertical. It was rock climbing. But we're there in our OTI beanies, both me and Danny, matching OTI beanies, in our OTI hoodies with our OTI t-shirts. And I have to say, it really did, like the quality is... You're on the top of England's third biggest mountain and you're warm quality.
Brilliant.
You know,
there
so
you
it, it's been road tested. It's been mountain tested, this stuff. Yeah.
Well, we've got the hoodies, great quality, as Ben has tested there on the top of Helvellyn, wearing his hoodie and his T-shirt and his beanie. And there are some... There are a load of other T-shirts as well that I've got to get my kids to model, but the point blank refusing, because you know what our budget for modelling is? It's 10p plus a takeaway waffle and a milkshake from the place around the corner. So I need to work on the kids, get some more photos up there on the website, but all the merch is there. And honestly, it's really lovely stuff. It is quite tragic. We're not even joking when we say that both myself and Ben are sitting here now on this call wearing our OTI hoodies.
Yeah.
It's cast the dead warm. Take a quick look over theinfluence.co.uk.
And click on the OTI merch tab at the top. And of course, by doing that, you know, you're not just getting some very high quality mounted tested clothing for yourself. You're also supporting us and what we do here, and we really do appreciate it. The person who appreciates it more than anyone is Sharon, because her conservatory is currently taken up by boxes and boxes of our merch, because we got a bit carried away when we ordered, let's do beanies, let's have 1,000, so please buy our merch, please. We're in huge debt, but it really is, it's supporting us, and we really appreciate that. So thank you. Shall we talk to Laura McCowan again, world famous Laura McCowan?
Yes, please. Laura, can we talk about how your life changed, not just as a parent, but uncovering you and your dreams and your aspirations and the fact you wanted to be a writer and you knew that's what you wanted to do, and yet you've ended up writing about sobriety and, you know, inspiring thousands across the world. It's quite ironic, isn't it, in many
it
ways
is. But never would have thought.
I love the thought that you stop drinking, you remove alcohol, and then all this stuff starts to happen, be it big, small, whatever. And I describe it as, it's like the lid lifting on your world, and you open up this potential and this stuff that I always suspect is always in there, but with a big fat grey bloody cloud of booze over the top of it. Remove that cloud and it's like, ta-da! Talk to us about the writing and what that whole process was like on the other side of your recovery.
Yeah. It's been a total miracle. My experience is that, there's this quote in St. Thomas that I stumbled on when I won't forget, because I was like 22 days sober and it was at this retreat. I write about this in We Are the Luckiest. But I opened this book randomly on my way out of a retreat at a bookstore. And it was, the book was The Great Work of Your Life. But the quote on the page that I opened up to was, if you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. And if you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. So if you bring forth what is within you, that potential, it will save your life. And if you do not bring forth what is within you. It will destroy you. And when I read that at 22 days sober, I thought, that's it right there. That's what's happening to me. Alcohol itself was killing me. I was physically very unwell. I mean, it would have killed me, but it was the spiritual death of my potential that was the most painful part. I knew I was wasting my life. I knew I was squandering my potential. I knew it. And in the deepest way, you can know something. And I knew that I wanted to be a writer. I knew that I wanted, I had this big energy in me and I wanted to use it. I didn't know what that would mean. I didn't know how. I had a completely different life and a completely different job. And I had all this, like all the practical stuff was not, was certainly not pointing towards that. But my experience is that our unused potential is not benign. It turns into this very dark energy. It looks like depression, resentment, hatred. It turns dark. And when we, for whatever, you know, reason, we are not living into our potential, for me, it was addiction. And I think addiction will always, is always, you know, I do not think it's possible to live into your potential as a person while being in active addiction. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. Once I lifted the alcohol, I had all this energy still and I could use it. And I just started to pour into writing. And I wasn't writing to like help anyone. I wasn't writing to save anybody. I was just trying to figure out what the hell was going on with me, what happened, and trying to pull the thread, you know, and make sense of things. And it was cathartic and it saved my life. Writing saved my life. Absolutely. And one thing, you know, it's a very long story and a process, but once I started working towards that, it just, I followed the next breadcrumb and then the next and then the next, and there were detours and heartbreaks and everything you could imagine in between. But I mean, I just received the box of my new book. You get like the copies, the author copies, a few days ago. And when I opened up the box and I was looking, and then I sat down with one of the copies and I was looking at the author page, which has, you know, copyright Laura McCowan, Random House, da da da. And I was just going, this is unreal that this is such a, because we don't often, I'm not able to like take in peak moments very well. It's like they just, there's too much. But for some reason that it just, I just could drop into my body in that moment and see like what a freaking miracle it is that that was a physical thing that existed in the world now, the second time, you know, and it would have never happened if I was drinking.
It is mad, the things that happen, isn't it? Because I mean, you know, you followed the breadcrumbs and yes, of course, you know, there were heartbreaks and, you know, dead ends. But the breadcrumbs have basically led to hundreds of thousands of people across the world being inspired by your words. Which is,
thank you.
That is nuts, isn't it?
It's not bad going, is it? Not bad.
It's just, does that just kind of like...
But that's not what I set out to do. It's not, I wasn't trying to do that. I think that's important for people to hear because I was just doing the thing that I needed, wanted to do. I was just following my thing. And I love that that happened.
But I think that's sobriety.
I wasn't trying to do that.
That's sobriety, this whole... I keep calling it a cracker's journey. It's bonkers. That's it in a nutshell. I didn't even
I
want
love
to stop
your British
drinking.
Words.
Who was it that came on and we were trying to do like the serious kind of introduction, right? So, you know, we're pre-recorded, it's not live, so we can stop that and do all of my boring producer bits at the beginning. And she was like, just stop there. What is wanging on? Was it Sarah Heppler?
It was Sarah Heppler.
Yeah. Oh, I love so much. Of course she said that.
She was
I
so
love
funny.
That wanging on.
Like, just okay, keep cool. Wanging on, guys.
This is going to be a good one. we can teach you all sorts. We'll give you a British glossary to take away
on,
with you.
Cracking on. Bonkers.
Bonkers. Bonkers.
Bonkers. But that's sobriety in a nutshell. What you've just said there, Laura, about you didn't intend for any of this to happen. We didn't intend to have this podcast. We didn't intend to have this community of people who just get it, that want to change their relationship with alcohol. But like I say, crazy shit keeps happening when you keep not drinking. And, you know, to go back to Susan that's watching this call, who was on the pod last week, the believer in those early days when you're like, I can't do any of this shit. I can't exist without alcohol.
I know.
Hang on.
Yes, it does require a tremendous amount of faith, and you have to decide to have it. Like, what else do I have? I'm going to just believe these people. She's right. Because I remember one of my friends, Jen, said to me when I just kept not staying sober, like, just the light will come on. Just stay in it. You know, the light will come on. And I would think it maybe for everyone else, like, I will be the one who will be left out of that because I seem to be more broken or something. But no one gets left out of that. No one does. You stay in it long enough, it's going to come on.
And we are the luckiest.
Oh,
see what I did there, Laura.
You know what, Laura? Can you give Push Off From Here a huge plug? Because I am a bit like we were talking about earlier about paradoxes. I'm conflicted here because I really like you and I get a feeling that we are absolutely going to be friends. But then I remember that you're in Cancun and I'm not. And then it kind of just, you know what I mean? I'm like,
you have a resentment right now?
A bit of a resentment going on. But can you give us a huge plug for the book that's coming out on the 7th of March?
Oh, gladly. Thank you for the opportunity. So those 9 things that you read, those 9 points, that's the basis of Push Off From Here. They appear as the epigraph in We Are the Luckiest. This is like page before the book starts. And when that book came out, so many people were talking about that little epigraph, like not the book. It's just like, oh, what about these 9 things? People would want to interview me. What about the 9 things? I'm like, okay, we can talk about that. It's not really what the book was about, but okay. So it was clear they had like they were sticky to people. And then when I started the Luckiest Club, which is my community, we use them as our sort of closing statement in every meeting. They're very much a part of the culture, but it became obvious that people wanted to know what they actually meant. You know, what does it mean when you say it's not your fault? Like, how is that, what does that actually mean? And how is that helpful? Or what does it mean when we say it's unfair that this is your thing? Like, what does that do for me? Is it really unfair? You know, is it unfair? Should it be fair? So there are all these questions. Like, you intuitively get the statements when you say them, but when you dig into them, it's like, what does that actually mean? And how do I use it? That's what Push Off From Here. It is a deep dive into each of those 9 statements. I don't believe it's going to be out in the UK, at least not yet, but hopefully that's coming. It will be out on Audible and Kindle. And yeah, March 7th, everywhere books are sold.
Apart from the UK. Look, I love that you still came on the podcast, by the way. Bearing in mind, you know, someone who's big and famous like you has a big, lots of media things to do.
Big and famous! And, you
know, oh my God, I'm not big and famous, but this is wonderful. I love doing this, and you both are you're so awesome to be hanging out with. You made it very fun.
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
I'm doing some Australian stuff too, and I'm like, the book might not be there, but let's talk.
These conversations are fantastic. I wanted to tell you what your book made me think of, Push Off From Here. And you talked about it being a deep dive. I might be going down a really weird, wrong path here, but you know when you jump into the water in a swimming pool and you're learning to swim, and you go under the water and you push off really fast and hold your breath and go for as far as you can. That's what it conjures up. I might be completely off the mark there.
No, you're not. I actually say that in the book, that it's like pushing off the side of a pool or a boat setting out from harbor. That's why there's water on the cover. You're not bonkers.
Yeah, well, nice.
some people would disagree.
Bonkers.
Yeah. Bonkers.
Bonkers.
Slightly insulting now, Laura. You know, starting to kind of go the other way now.
You can start with the bonkers now, Laura.
Okay, I'll stop.
Let's just say to our community members watching, by the way, if you've got any questions for Laura, then y'all are very welcome to ask them in the chat box.
God, you didn't, Ben. Ben's got this atrocious habit of anybody, be it an American listener, American member, American guest, he uses the word, he just can't help it, y'all. So if y'all. Y'all could put
thanks
your
question. For listening.
I'm going, yeah. Look, I've gone red. Secondhand embarrassment for you, Ben.
It's because now, Laura, 1 in 4 people who listen to Over the Influence are in the United States of America.
Yeah.
Well, and we all say that, clearly. We all say, you've heard me y'all. Say it. How many times?
Y'all say it.
You all say it.
Oh, it's been the best chat, Laura. It has been,
yes.
I think, everything we hope for and more with knobs on. So thank you kindly. If people want to find out about your hang on, excuse me. I was going to call it the Yuckiest Club. That's quite different.
That's like the B-side, like the... Yeah. The back end lounge of the Luckiest Club.
It's called
the
Yuckiest Club. If anybody wants to find out about the Luckiest Club and your books and everything you do, Laura, where can they find that information?
My website has it all there. It's my name, lauramccowan.com. The
Amazing.
Yuckiest Club. I'm going to make it. It's going to happen. It's the dark side of the Luckiest Club.
Me and Ben will be your two first members to the Yuckiest Club. What a thoroughly flipping, brilliant, marvellous chat that was with the one and only Laura McCowan. Wasn't that good? I could listen to her all day, Ben.
I think I will go and listen to her all day in the edit of that now. And because, you know, I edit everything very thoroughly, but I think I might edit this one and then go back and listen to it immediately straight away because I really, really enjoyed it.
How does it make you feel when we get a guest on the pod and you look up and they're there on your quotes board?
Well, I'm just...
It's quite a big deal, though.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, will Aristotle come on? You know,
can
we get Seneca on the pod?
They've got a decent AF story to share.
Yeah.
Drop me a line.
You know what? I'm not sure if Seneca is alcohol-free. Oh, shit, and he died 2,000 years ago. Right, okay, yeah. Yeah, that's another
okay.
problem.
Yeah. Noted. Noted.
But maybe Mikel Arteta, the Arsenal manager.
Who knows?
He's thriving. Who knows? Yeah. I wonder if he's alcohol-free. You'd imagine that he's alcohol-free. Anyway, we're going off on one. Buy our merch is what we want to say before we go, because we've got loads
of
it.
Yeah,
and it's good
quality. Two reasons
quality.
We need you to do this.
Yeah.
There's two big reasons. One, because there's absolutely shed loads of it, and it's most of it's on the website. I need to get my backside into gear and get some more of it on the website. The second reason is there are around 7 massive cardboard boxes in my conservatory, and we've had to move the dining table, and it's just pissing off the family. So if you could... buy some merch. Just buy a beanie. We only ordered, I don't know, 10,000-ish.
Yeah.
We went a bit cray-cray on the order. We're like, oh, we'll have that. Oh, yeah, we'll have that. Oh, they look good. Mm. I mean, these are road-tested items, aren't they, Ben, as you well know?
Yeah, yeah. Up Helvellyn yesterday, England's third biggest mountain, when it was snow on the top. Road-tested, very good quality, and very stylish. You know, it's a lovely logo, embroidered, the white on black.
I've seen a photo of you at the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
And I looked at it, I thought, is Ben wearing his banking outfit? He's very black heavy.
Since I was a kid, I just always wear black clothes and I've just always, yeah. But that's my walking black clothes. I've got my...
Okay, it wasn't the banking outfit.
No. Well, I wasn't wearing my jeans and my nice Hugo Boss jacket up the mountain. I got my walking trousers and my OTI merch.
Amazing stuff. So, yeah, we've got hoodies, we've got beanies, we've got T-shirts. I stamped my size 5s and demanded, I think, some orange T-shirts as well.
No, they never made it. Although,
did they not make the court?
No. Speaking of the orange, though, we have got to get the festive AF Christmas jumper off the website. I feel like it might be... It might be time in March.
I don't know. I might just keep them because I like the orange. Yeah. Might just keep it up there. You could get in early, actually, because it was a debacle just before Christmas. I think we only picked up the merch on, like, Christmas Eve. And then there was a postal strike. And it was like, okay, these are Christmas jumpers that might arrive in time for Christmas 2023.
Yeah.
Get your order in now for this year's Festive AF jumper. God. Do it. And... get a beanie as well. Mm. Really nicely colour coordinated. All the merch is on the website. It's at overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Right. Who's next week, Shaz?
God, I actually don't even know.
Find out next week when we'll be back every Monday.
Tune in next week.
Yeah, with a guest who's inspirational from the AF world.
I tell you what, now the reason I do know, it's all on my calendar. It's the only place I use an electronic calendar is to book the guests for Over the Influence because there are so flipping many. We're booked up till summer and beyond. It's
summer?
A joke. Yes.
No.
I work very hard behind the scenes, you know.
I know you do. Hang on. I'm just looking ahead. Oh, it's not on the website yet. So I don't know who is next week.
Yeah, I say work very hard behind the scenes. Not that bit.
Because, of course, yeah. If you are an OTI community member, you can watch the podcast being recorded every week. So, well, when we get the event up, you can actually
hold on to it. When I pull my finger out and actually get it done. I've been too busy humping boxes of merch around my conservatory.
Excuse me? Right, okay. We'll see you next week. Strange. We'll see you next week. Nothing else to say, is there?
Nothing else to say. Overtheinfluence.co.uk. All the info's on there. Thank you for listening at the same time next week with a brilliant, brilliant guest. TBC.